Calgary Flames hockey is brought to you by High Steakhouse and the Alberta Ford Dealers.
You're listening to CFAC 960 AM, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Owned and operated by Rogers Media. Also streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Trending right now in Calgary.
Paul Byron has been claimed off waivers by the Montreal Canadiens. The Flames placed him on waivers yesterday. Mason Raymond, however, cleared waivers just after 10 o'clock today. He remains with the team. The American League wildcard game goes tonight at Yankee Stadium, New York, hosting Houston at 6 o'clock. Winner goes on to take on Kansas City in an ALDS. We'll have that game for you tonight on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. CFL week kicks off early in Ottawa with the Red Blacks as the road team against Toronto. It's all accurate. 5:30 kickoff tonight.
Brought to you by Western Direct Insurance. Looking for a better deal on car insurance? At Western Direct Insurance, you could save up to 30%. Get a quick car insurance quote today at westerndirect.ca. Go Western.
The Calgary Flames, your team. Anything they do on or off the ice is here first. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Steinberg, The Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Theory, they should be equipped to beat anyone because they're, you know, arguably the best or second best or third best team in baseball as we finish the season. So they should beat just about everybody. But Texas, I think a lot of people would say the same thing, that Texas is going to be a bit of a tough out for them. Gallardo has owned them in two starts this year. Cole Hamels pitching really well, you know, was really good in the last game of the season. Now he won't start till game two in this series, I believe. Texas does a lot of things well, but you know, it's, you know, welcome to the postseason.
Stephen Brunt this morning with Boomer and Rhett, taking a look at his matchup, Texas and the Jays. Just in a couple of minutes, we'll head down to Dallas, and we'll talk to a beat writer, Jeff Wilson, from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, who covers the Texas Rangers. On paper, Pat, we talked about it before, some similarities here. I don't think there's is it a gigantic mismatch? Probably not. The Jays are the prohibitive favorites, I would suppose. Or are they?
Maybe, but I don't think it's like a huge gap. Like, I think that they're the favorites. I look at the Blue Jays and I say, I see a lot of similarities in these two teams, but I like the Blue Jays a little bit more in those similar areas. For instance, the 1-2 punch that Texas has at pitcher. You know, I like Price Stroman, who are going to be your game 1-2 starters for Toronto, just slightly more than I like Gallardo Hamels. Just a little bit more, right? And it's only very, very slight. And I like Toronto's pitching depth as they go to 3-4 with Estrada 3 and Dickey 4 a little bit more than I like Texas. You know, the Blue Jays were the highest scoring team in Major League Baseball. Texas was number 3. And, you know, but I like the Blue Jays and what they're able to throw at you 1-9 just a little bit better. That's kind of what it comes down to for me. I think the Jays are just a slight bit deeper, a slight bit better than Texas. The problem is that tends to play itself out better over a best of 7 series.
Yeah.
In a best of 5, all of a sudden you fall down 1-0 in your home building, and you're behind the 8-ball, and that could very easily happen because these two teams are as evenly matched as they are. Again, I like Toronto slightly more in a lot of these areas, but we're not talking about massive gaps at all.
How are the Rangers in one-run games?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
Because we know Toronto.
We know Toronto's pretty darn good at that.
That is not their strength, right?
Yeah.
They would prefer to blow you out.
Yeah, the one, especially down the stretch, some of those one-run games didn't go their way. But at the same time, with Josh Donaldson and his walk-off home run prowess and, you know, some of what they've done in extra innings and their comeback prowess, you know, the Blue Jays are a very formidable out. You know, I'm actually really intrigued by this series in terms of the matchup because they are, in a lot of ways, as similar as they are.
And they're both going to be full ballparks. You know, you can complain all we want about the start times. The interest is going to be there. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be a shortage of people paying attention.
No, and I mean, look, the Rangers are a team that, hey, this is kind of not old hat to them, but this is a pretty consistent.
They've been there before,
they,
right?
They are consistently there, but you know what? They've had some disappointments at the highest level, and there's a group of fans that are absolutely looking to see their team get to that top of the mountain and then capture what's at the top of the mountain. It's a really cool place where the Rangers play. I think it's going to be a really good atmosphere. I'm looking forward to the way this series goes. I think that it's going to be a fun, entertaining series.
Well, we're very pleased to welcome Jeff Wilson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, who covers the Texas Rangers on a daily basis, to join us today on the big show to talk a little bit about the Rangers' perspective in this matchup in the AL Division Series. First of all, Jeff, thanks for doing this. Give us, if you can, a little bit of a nutshell description of the last couple of months for Texas. Up here, we know what the Jays' last couple of months since the trade deadline have been like, but what's it been like for the Rangers?
Yeah, I think they've kind of, until really mid-September, kind of flown under the radar. You know, they got the Cole Hamill deal, which of course was a big deal. But when they got him, they were eight games back, and after his first start, they fell nine games back. So, you know, but they slowly kind of took advantage of the rest of the division not being very good, and then you saw some key players who struggled in the first half, like Adrian Beltre and Shin-Soo Choo, and Elvis Andrus. They started to hit a little bit, and then in Choo's case, hit a lot. And suddenly this team was pretty good. They were pitching well. The Hamill Street was great. The bullpen was redone. So in the last 2 months, this team has been just completely different than it was the first four.
The strength of the Texas Rangers as they head into this series, where do you see their strengths?
You know, right now it's the back end of the bullpen with Sean Tolleson and a closer, but more importantly, Sam Dyson and Jake Diekman, kind of there in the seventh and eighth inning, guys acquired at the trade deadline, really took what was a glaring weakness of the team in the first half, and they've turned it into a strength. Hard throwers, power arms, guys who know how to get outs, and then the offense. It's pretty amazing after watching this team in April to see what they're capable of doing now. And really, it starts with Shin-Soo Choo getting on base, and Adrian Beltre driving in every runner. It seems like every chance he has to drive in a run, he does it.
Jeff, just, I guess, a thought. I mean, there's a lot of similarities between these teams, but both went out and got aces or you know, really good starters in David Price and Cole Hamels, respectively. Tell me about Cole and his transition to the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, the guy who's pitched in the National League his whole life, so I think there was a little transition. He's a guy who, you hear this a lot, thrown around a lot, but a guy who's really dedicated to his routine. And he had some trouble adjusting, you know, pitchers hitting the National League, and he was going to new cities and new ballparks, and he had to kind of learn it. And it took him a couple weeks to get comfortable, but now that he's comfortable, the Rangers have won his last 10 starts. He's really only had one bad start in all of it, and they won the game anyway. But what he did Sunday is why they got him. You know, just to go out in a big game and to deal and to carry the team where they wanted to go. It was really pretty impressive.
Jeff Wilson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram beat writer covering the Texas Rangers, our guest here on the big show. Pat?
Tell me a little bit more about Yovani Gallardo, because we saw him pitch the lights out in two games against the Blue Jays this year. He's had a heck of a season, but give us a little bit more as to just how quality a number one this guy is.
Well, you know, it's been a tale of two halves of the season. He was great in the first half. Had a heck of an argument to be an all-star. At one point, he threw 33 and a third scoreless inning consecutively. And really, when the Rangers were waiting for guys to get healthy, Yovani was carrying the pitching staff. In the second half, he's struggled to get really out of the sixth inning. He hasn't gone seven since June. He piles up pretty high pitch counts early. A lot of that is he's navigating lineups. He knows where to get his outs. He's not afraid to pitch around guys. If it gets him the matchup he wants, he is a veteran. He's only 29, but he broke into the majors and he was 21. He's pitching some big games in his career. He's gone to the postseason with Milwaukee. He's got a 2.08 ERA in the postseason. So this guy knows how to do it. But it's been a little a little different in the second half for them. The Rangers have kind of had a quick hook. A lot of that is because they've been in close games and you know, a chase for the division. But he's a veteran, and he just knows where to find his outs.
So are you worried about him heading into game one of this series? What's your confidence level in him?
Well, when we tweeted out that he was the starter, it was a pretty mixed bag reaction. I don't think there is a lot of faith in him right now, at least among the fan base. But if you watch the whole season and the whole body of work, then you know that he's going to give his team a chance to win. He's won 13 games. He lost 11, but you know he never got really too terribly blown out of a start. So the Rangers will be in the game. I think he's good against right-handed hitters. He keeps the ball on the ground. He doesn't give up many home runs. So I think those are all kind of the formula that pointed the Rangers in this direction.
We've talked about Gallardo. We talked about Hamels already. What about the rest of this playoff rotation for Texas? What else can we expect? And educate us a little bit more as we move towards Game 3 and Game 4 of this series.
Yeah, you know, it's they didn't announce who it would be for either of those two games. I would think that Colby Lewis and Derek Holland, not necessarily in that order, will get the starts. Lewis is the team's franchise leader in postseason wins. He likes the big stage, very calm guy. Remarkable story. You know, he's basically pitching on a fake hip. Just a good story that he's even pitching, and he pitched pretty well this year. He won 17 games. He took a couple bullets for the team. Had some big runs piled up on him in some games. But I think they're going to like him being steady. They're going to like him that he's right-handed going against the Blue Jays with all those right-handed hitters. So I would expect to see him in one of the two games. And then Holland came off the DL in August, a guy who really maybe his best start ever was in game four of the 2011 World Series, ain't the third scoreless against that St. Louis team. Emotional guy, good stuff when he's on, and he's been up and down, but the last few starts he's been headed in the right direction. So I think the Rangers like where he's trending.
You mentioned the strength being the bullpen and kind of starting with Tolleson at closer and going there. Just can you expand a little bit as to how formidable this group is once the starter comes out?
Sure. When that game got away from them Saturday, the Rangers had, I think they converted their last, I don't remember how many saves, but they had won their last 21 games when they'd been leading after eight innings. I don't have the season total off the top of my head, but it's, Since Tolleson took over as closer, it's very good. He wasn't the closer to start the year. If Tally Feliz was, he didn't work out. He eventually got DFA'd. Tolleson's just an even-keeled guy. His stuff doesn't blow you away, but the way he mixes his pitches, he has three of them. His changeup's probably his out pitch. Just an effective closer. He's gotten the job done. Dyson, he's probably been the most impressive of late. Big arm, 96, 97. He really only throws a sinker. He'll mix in a changeup and a little slider, but he has like 5-6 pitch innings, just getting guys to beat the ball into the ground. And it's been, when he came over from the Marlins, it's just been special. It really has been. And they have him under contract until 2021. And those are the two guys that you're going to see eight to ninth inning. The Rangers have a lead.
Jeff, offensively, we're talking about two of the three highest scoring teams in the majors, Toronto number one and Texas number three. And you know, watching the Blue Jays all year long, we're very used to them getting things done offensively with the long ball. They're the highest home run team in the majors, but not the case with Texas. Not that they don't have power, not that they can't go long, but a little bit differently. Like, we're talking about four guys over 80 in RBIs, Moreland Fielder, Beltre Chu. Like, they go about it a little bit differently. It's not just relying on home runs or anything like that.
Yeah, you're right. They're very versatile in how they can score. They're not afraid to take a base, try to steal a base. They're aggressive on the bases, going first to third. You know, they just try to get the run home. If there's a runner at third, they try to get them home, and they'll take a ground out, a sacrifice fly, whatever. But yeah, the power, it seems like, has come a little bit more of late. Beltre hit the big two-run homer the other day. Josh Hamilton, can't forget about him. He hit two homers Saturday, really just a tremendous second half for him. Great September. So it's a team that can win. They can single you to death. They can single and double you to death. And it seems like when the home runs come, they're pretty timely. So it's a little bit different than what baseball fans are used to, you know, those teams in the late 90s and early 2000s. These guys are pretty well-rounded.
Final question for me, Jeff, and that's on a guy that you already mentioned, but just how, I mean, amazing is maybe the wrong word, but just how outstanding has Adrian Beltre's season been, knowing that he's doing all this at the age of 36?
Well, it's not just his age. He sprained his thumb on May 31st, had to go on the DL. He came off the DL, A, prematurely, B, without a rehab assignment. And really, he scuffled for about a month trying to find the right grip, trying to find a pad that he could wear on the thumb when he batted, and in his glove, too. So he gets hot, and then 2-3 weeks ago, he jams his index finger on the same hand, left hand, diving into third base. So right now, he's basically swinging the bat with eight healthy fingers. You'll notice when you watch the games that his index finger's basically in a brace, a splint, and so it's barely even on the bat. So what he's done to continue to be a plus defensive player, and then to have, I think since August 15th, he has the most majors in the the most RBIs in the American League. It's tremendous, and he is a clutch player. And, you know, during that Angel series, whenever the Rangers needed a big hit, he came up with it. So, you know, not his best year, but through 2-3 years ago, he had 30 homers, finished third in the MVP voting. But this year, it's remarkable for a veteran player to be able to navigate an injury, manage an injury, and still be a productive player.
Jeff Wilson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, our guest here on the Big Show as we talk about the Texas Rangers. We talked about a lot here for a long time about the Jays not being in the postseason. That's not the case for the Texas Rangers. They're kind of used to being around the postseason. Does that benefit them, do you think, having, you know, playoff experience, taking on a team that has really, as a team, none, individuals certainly, but as a team, none?
You know, those 2010 and 2011 teams that went to the World Series, I think there's only six or seven players left. So a lot of playoff newcomers, albeit, you know, Gallardo has been, Hamels has been, obviously, he was a World Series MVP. Yep. So I think they're going to know what to expect. And this is a team that you know, 2011, boy, that was heartbreak. You know, they were two strikes away, or one strike away twice in Game 6 from winning the World Series and didn't get it done. And then in 2012, they collapsed. They were leading the division by 5 with 9 to go. Didn't even win the division and then bowed out in the wild card game. So, you know, if you want to say unfinished business, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's handling adversity. I think maybe if they get down a game, you know, if Price beats them Thursday, I don't think there's going to be a lot of panic. So it's the experience, it really does matter. I mean, you talk about the Sabre metrics world and all that, where they try to put players in a vacuum, you can't do that. You know, experience pays off. These people who have been through it, these players who have been through it, know how to handle the situations, know what to expect. And the playoffs are a different beast. They are. And, you know, it's very nice to have Hamels, Gallardo, Beltre, Josh Hamilton even. So there's definitely value to it.
My feeling anyway, I'm curious about your observation on this. Teams that played six total times, you know, they're not divisional opponents. They're not traditional rivals. They're not geographical rivals. Very difficult for me, at least, to see any kind of rivalry anywhere. How do people in Dallas view the Rangers? Or they view the Jays? How do the Rangers view the Jays?
Well, there's definitely respect for, you know, it's hard to ignore what they did at the trade deadline. It's hard to ignore Josh Donaldson, who the Rangers got to know when he played for Oakland and saw him quite a bit. So, there's no doubt that the Rangers themselves know the Blue Jays, and they know David Price. You know, they faced David Price twice in the 2010 division series, once in 11, and then in 13 in a play-in game to get the second wild card. So, you know, they know all about David Price and have a tremendous amount of respect for him. And the fans, like I said, they pay attention to the trade deadline stuff. And the fans that really pay attention know that the Blue Jays have just been a bad matchup really the past few seasons for the Rangers.
Speaking of the fans, how they taken the early starts to the beginning of the series?
They're not taking them very well, I can tell you that. people are tweets, people tweeting to me, you can't be serious. I think the 11:45 start on Friday here is going to be a shocker to them, and I'm sure in Calgary when it's even a little bit earlier, probably a shock too.
Jeff, really appreciate this. Really nice to get a kind of a view from the other side on this. Looking forward to this series, obviously, up here. It's been an awful long time, but really can't thank you enough for spending some time with us today.
Well, thanks, guys. I think it's going to be a good series.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Jeff Wilson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. What I got out of that, Pat, right at the end is there's no rivalry with the Jays. There's a rivalry with David Price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got that, and they might see him twice in this series. You got out of the fact that there's a team that has given the Rangers some trouble over the last few years. I mean, the Jays are – now, it's a little bit different with the Hamels acquisition. The Rangers are a little bit deeper when it comes to their rotation. But, look, Jays are a tough matchup for a lot of teams right now because, when you're talking about having to – even when you're talking about high-end starters, it's a difficult proposition to be navigating that lineup and navigating and pitching around one guy here and then having to go right at somebody here. And all of a sudden, you're going right at somebody who can hurt you pretty darn well. So, this is a tough matchup, and I think that for Price, for Stroman, for Estrada, Beltre's having a very good year. Prince Fielder's been great. Yeah. Shin-Soo Choo's extremely difficult to get out. He's very, very good in that respect. I mean, they're having them. Moreland's got a ton of RBIs. So this is a pretty deep Texas team and a Rangers group that is not easy to get out either, but it's just the Blue Jays are just that little bit much deeper, I think, or that little bit more deep. And you just, when you really think about it and take yourself away from the fanfare and the excitement that has been the Blue Jays this year and just look at that lineup and what any opposing pitcher has to go through every single night, like, that's why I think they're capable of winning multiple playoff series, because if they stay healthy and they perform to what they're capable of more often than not, they're a difficult team to get out, and they're a difficult team to put away.
To me, there's a couple things. Are we past the knuckleball component of R.A. Dickey? Is that an intangible in this series? Because they're going to pitch him in Arlington, right? If they pitch him, they'll pitch him in Arlington.
Yeah, game four would be in Texas, right.
Is the pitch an X factor? Not the player, but the fact that he's a knuckleball pitcher. Is that an X factor in this at all?
Tim Wakefield pitched in Boston during the playoffs,
and
that
I
was
just,
an X factor.
I just remember that Wakefield was impactful in the playoffs because he was a knuckleballer. That it was a change-up, that there was that focus, and all of a sudden everybody starts talking about how do you hit the knuckleballer? How do you catch the knuckleballer?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the knuckleballer. Oh, no, they've got a knuckleballer. We don't have a knuckleballer. Get us a knuckleballer. But really, tongue out of cheek, Marcus Stroman, we are, a month or 3 weeks ago? We were talking about him making a start in Pawtucket before he got recalled, and he might get a start in New York, and he got shelled in Pawtucket, but Burley had to get a cortisone shot. So he has been quite a story.
And now he's your game two starter at home. They're going with him.
Right.
And, I think it was probably going to be him to begin with. I mean, Estrada made a pretty
darn good case for
himself.
But they weren't taking it for granted, right? They weren't taking it for granted. They didn't know what they had in Marcus Stroman. They hoped this is the best possible scenario.
I mean, and how many times have we had guys on? I mean, we've had Shai Davidi on.
Yes.
We've had Ben Nicholson-Smith on. Yesterday we had Joe Siddle on.
Yeah.
Everybody's shocked at how dominant Stroman's been and how he's been able to pitch the way he has since coming back. I mean, it's pretty incredible what the guy's been able to do after the one start in AAA, and the next thing you know, he's pitching like this in the major. And the first game he pitches in the majors, he was pretty good, better in the second game, and it's just kind of gone from there. I don't know if anybody expected Stroman to be as dominant as he's been. And the other thing about Stroman is, much like Price, who's going to pitch on Thursday, is that you get that. Like, these guys are straws that stir the drink emotionally too.
Characters.
Like, they are characters. Yeah. You feed off them. You thrive off their emotion. And so having those two guys, it's kind of contagious. And I think it's a great way to start. I think just the fact that the two best pitchers on the roster, first of all, you want to go bam, 1-2 with them to kick off a best of five. Yeah. But also to have that kind of emotional boost too, to have those two guys, it's going to be a jacked up atmosphere at Rogers Center on Thursday and Friday. I just think it plays really well into one another. You go into Texas with Estrada as your third pitcher. Estrada's last start was great, even though the Jays lose that game to Tampa. What Estrada, that was a quality start. Yeah. Made a case for himself maybe to be the number two starter, but I think they're making the right call to go to Stroman. I just like the way this thing shapes up to the point that, yes, do I think Dickey and the knuckleball is a factor and it's a bit of an X factor and all of that. I think where the Jays will be, they'll also be in a spot where, you know what, I think there's a potential that they've got an opportunity to wrap that series up in game four, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they get there.
Stroman, Cole Hamels. Who would have guessed that a couple of months ago? Of all of the craziness, of all the things that have taken place, can you imagine that is your pitching lineup?
Well, and Price is your game one pitcher, right?
Right, right, but yeah, no, it's something else. Do you want to go to the beach or you want to go to Slipknot?
Let's go to the beach.
Okay, because fan club members...
I want to go to the beach with Boomer and Warner.
Yes, you do. Why wouldn't you? If you're a fan club member and you're hoarding your points for months and months and months just waiting for that special trip to come along, it's now. It's November. It's Mexico. 7 days, all-inclusive food, beach, drinks, pool, and a sports bar to watch Flames games. Enter now. Enter often. The draw will be made a week from this Friday, October 16th. For more details, go to sportsnet.ca/960. And, of course, I want to thank our host, Marlin Travel, on 5th and 5th in the heart of downtown Calgary. It's been a busy day. It's been a busy day around the National Hockey League. Want to get caught up on a few things. Elliot Friedman's going to join us in just a little over an hour from now. But when we come back, Pat and I will kick around a couple of Flames topics and a couple of NHL topics. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Proud to call Calgary home. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show, brought to you by Comedy Cave. If it's comedy you crave, come to the Cave. Tickets are always $10. Comedy's so good, you'll whip out your funny bone. Go to comedycave.com.
Trending right now in Calgary.
Paul Byron has been claimed off waivers by the Montreal Canadiens. The Flames placed him on waivers yesterday. Mason Raymond, however, cleared waivers just after 10 o'clock today. He remains with the team. The American League wildcard game goes tonight at Yankee Stadium, New York, hosting Houston at 6 o'clock. Winner goes on to take on Kansas City in an ALDS. We'll have that game for you tonight on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. CFL week kicks off early in Ottawa with the Red Blacks as the road team against Toronto. It's all accurate. 5:30 kickoff tonight.
Brought to you by Carproof. Have you got some dirty little secrets? Bet your car does. Find out about past accidents, unfixed recalls, and more with a free Carproof report. Get the proof at carproof.com.
Boomer and Warner in the morning. Ryan Pinder. The Jim Rome Show. Steinberg on Hockey Central. The Big Show with Rob Kerr. And every game for your Flames. We are Calgary Sports all the time. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. On the NHL beat, it's The Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
We've got a responsibility both to the players, but number one to the people. And we spoke, you know, we had clear, hard, honest discussions with our players about, you know, we sometimes people think out there that the player or the team or the, just because we're an NHL player that we're immune to the issues and the problems of society. We're not. But the best way you deal with them, I feel, is out front, honest, face-to-face, and that's what we've done. We've done that. We talked to our players during camp. We talked to our players today. You know, we traditionally have a meeting where I meet with the players, and we talk about various things.
It's Brad True Living. Responding to questions today, I believe it was Sportsnet's Roger Millions that brought it up. Reports out of Toronto yesterday. Actually, it's Rick Westhead at TSN, not reports out of Toronto. It's a story, Pat. You know, Bill Daly, who we'll talk to tomorrow at 4:05, was asked about the use of cocaine in the National Hockey League and other recreational drugs and other issues. And they acknowledge there's an issue. You know, in Rick Westhead's column on TSN, he points to a situation in which the Toronto Police Service reached out to the Maple Leafs and said, look, you might have a problem here. I want to be really careful and responsible how we talk about this, because Ron Robinson, the commissioner of the Western Hockey League, is going to join us in just a couple of seconds, and we're going to talk about a program that they're launching. Many cases, this is not new, but it's, you know, like a lot of things we talk about. What you might have got away with in the past, what might have been boys being boys in the past, mm-hmm. is not socially responsible anymore, which is not, or socially accepted anymore. Sorry, you have to be aware and responsible. It was kind of, not saying that drug use, recreational drug use was ever endorsed, but I think there was a blind eye turned to professional athletes and celebrities at times. Not unlike what we were talking about yesterday with, you know, headshots and the way that the game was played differently, viewed differently. It's changed. You know, I don't think anybody's sitting here going, well, you know, let's cut them some break, cut them some slack. They're athletes. Let them go and party. I think what we're talking about is you just don't, as an NHL franchise, as a professional sports franchise, as any kind of franchise, you have a public image. Your players have a public image. They are in the public eye, and never more magnified than it is right now.
Well, and I think one of the things that's really important in this new initiative that we're talking about with the Western Hockey League, mm-hmm. but I don't even think it's, and they have kind of made it part of their strive here, but you know, it's not just them. I think it carries over to whatever we're talking about, whether it be the National Hockey League, whether it be football, baseball, whatever. I mean, this is something that helps them. I think that responsible social media use, responsible yep. conduct off the field, off the court, off the ice, these are all important things for the individual player, just for their own well-being. But also it's important for them in the whole role of them being a role model. And they are, because, look, they are in the public eye, and there are, whether it be a smaller reach in the Western Hockey League or the biggest reach possible in the National Football League, you've got numerous kids who look up to you. And while that's not a responsibility that, you know, everybody embraces, it goes along with the territory of what you're doing.
Yep.
And I think as a league, you have to realize that. And even if the players don't all embrace it, and don't get me wrong, most do. You go inside that Flames locker room, most, if not every single one of those guys, embraces being the role model and embraces being what they are to kids. But, you know, even if everybody doesn't embrace it, as a league, you have to understand it and make sure that you're putting these players as representatives of your league and as such as role models for younger generations. You have to be putting them in the best situation to not only succeed, but to also be a positive kind of beacon for people to aspire to. And I think it really is, it's important that these things are done more and more, because being a bad role model is so much more accessible now than it ever has been. Or it's a bad way of phrasing it, because bad role model, that seems very judgy.
No,
but doing things that can be construed as setting a bad example, those things are far more accessible now than they ever have been. And so it looks bad on the player and as such on the league way more than it ever has.
Look no further than what Patrick Kane and the Chicago Blackhawks and is going on there. We still don't even have an indictment. You know, there's still
no charges.
There's
nothing.
An investigation, yet we know what has happened and what has taken place. The demands now are that organizations, companies are responsible for this. You know, I don't know if this is necessarily a sports thing, do you? I mean, our company probably demands the same things. I'm not sure necessarily that you know, the resources are as highly profiled, but we have resources available to us for issues and things like that through our health and wellness mm-hmm. policy. Same thing. I mean, Brad, we're living in that conversation. We talk about the resources that are available to players. And I, quite honestly, again, I think that's one of the areas that we're going to see more and more investment in. You just look around here and what they've done in terms of hockey operations and scouting and statistics and analytics and problem solving. Well, then main development. even development. How many development coaches are there now in the organization? Well, the next thing is the human being, right?
Well,
and
that's,
the well-being.
That's why I think the LA Kings are such a really interesting kind of case study on this whole thing, because the Kings this past summer had two players that were that have been with them the last number of years who have been in some sort of trouble with the law for alleged and in some cases now charged and put to bed drug infractions. I mean, there was a possession situation. There was a crossing the border situation with Mike Richards. There's two hot water drug issues right there. So they've brought in Brent Myers to help them in that regard. Because hey, I mean, if you're in LA, you're like, there's a lot of temptation in Los Angeles, and there's a lot of ways to go wrong. So you don't want that to happen. You can't always prevent that stuff from happening. But to bring in a guy to help the group and to do what he's done, Elliot Friedman a couple of weeks ago on 30 Thoughts did a really nice write up on it and what Dan Carcillo's trying to do now in his post NHL career. I think that stuff like that is going to become more and more important and also more and more prevalent.
Well, and I think it's important, too, that you don't ostracize, that, you know, you take care of. And it might be a foregone, it might have been way too foregone, but, you know, what about a Sean Avery if there was actually, you know, efforts made early on in his career? You talk to guys who played with him none of this surprises. He was a wild kid. What if the resources were in place? What if we thought of things differently in the way that we deal with them now? You know, do you turn around a guy like that?
Yeah. And I mean, you never know. And I'm sure.
But you owe it to them to try.
Exactly. And you owe it to everybody to try and avoid that stuff going forward. And I know I know the NHL and the NHLPA has their substance abuse program. And a lot of people actually look at it and praise it and say the way they go about it is the right way. That doesn't mean that you can't do more. And I think that you can always do more. I think there's always ways to do more. And again, as a business, as an organization, you want to make sure that the people who are representing that business are doing so the way that you want them to and the way that reflects the best on you.
Yeah. I look forward to having a conversation, not about the specific topics that West had addressed with Bill Daly, but just kind of that thought, and we'll certainly get into it with Ron Robinson, the commissioner of the Western Hockey League, here in a second. But, you know, you're forced now as a league to look at, you know, things that you never looked at before.
Yep.
You owe it to your players, you owe it to your community, and that's the reality we live in. Do we have our guest?
Almost.
Okay. We're just in the process.
You can start introducing.
Can I start introducing our guest? It's always a pleasure to spend some time with Ron Robinson, the commissioner of the Western Hockey League. Yesterday, the WHL announced the Player Impact Program, in partnership with the Calgary Police Service and the Calgary Flames, among others. Ron, always good to talk to you, my friend. How are you, sir?
Very good, Rob. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Good. Well, I'm glad. It just seems like every time you and I are talking these days, it's about sort of social change and the way things are evolving and how away from hockey things are evolving. And I suppose this particular program, the Player Impact Program, is further proof of that.
Well, it absolutely is. And, of course, our players are like any young men today that are going to be faced with a lot of other challenges that are in society. And we want to make sure that they're prepared and respond accordingly.
Ron, the program that you're launching officially, this is the pilot project that Steve Kelly with the Calgary Police Service and some people from the Western Hockey League were involved in starting last year. Is that right?
That's correct. We've had a program in place for many years, which was developed actually probably 20 years ago by the RCMP based on our relationship in various communities around the Western Hockey League. But the Calgary Police Service, to their credit, initiated conversations with us thanks to the prompting of Brian Burke and the Calgary Flames organization that there was a need for not only a refresh of our existing program, but more importantly, a new comprehensive look at these issues because, of course, society has changed so much from a social media standpoint, diversity, the various challenges the players encounter both during the season and during the offseason. And we just felt it was important that the players be educated on this. And credit goes, though, to certainly the Calgary Police Service and Steve Kelly, who have developed this program and have done an excellent job in addressing the issues.
What about, because whenever you launch a pilot project, the idea is, you know, take it, refine it, and learn from it. How much of last year was I guess, how much have you adapted from the original project? How much did you guys learn last year when you launched it?
Well, we've had consultation with our we have established last year, and the timing was perfect from our standpoint because we've established a new WHL security network, which is consisting of liaison officers or police officers in many cases with each of the teams in the league, where we just felt it was time to address this and to look at more current issues that the players were facing. And so the timing was perfect when this came forward. One of the challenges we have, of course, is that as much as we have a team here in Calgary, we have teams in 21 other markets in all various jurisdictions with different laws that apply in each of those centers. And consequently, we had to make sure that the program allowed each of those jurisdictions to make sure that they customize the presentations, if you will, for the players to make sure whether you're in Spokane, Washington, or you're in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, the information is being geared to them wherever they're located.
With Ron Robison, the commissioner of the Western Hockey League, the WHL, launching its player impact program yesterday. Pat?
Hey, Ron, it's Pat Steinberg. How important is it to, I guess, realize that we're not talking about the Western Hockey League having a problem, but this is more to remain in step, do a little bit more preventative measures so that you're keeping up with things. It's not necessarily that you're reacting to a problem. You're more reacting to everything around you and staying in step.
That's exactly right, Pat. We are we look at it as a very much a preventative measure approach to make sure that our players are equipped to deal with these situations as they occur, that they are educated on the risks that they may face, and make sure that we are preparing them to deal with those situations. In all cases, these players are significant role models, either in the communities of where they came from or where they're playing, and we need to make sure that when they're encountering these things, that they deal with it appropriately.
That's the one, the place I wanted to go with you, because that whole, and it's in the news release, and it's been talked about many times, and that whole theory of being a role model. And when you play in the Western Hockey League, the National Hockey League, wherever, you're almost automatically thrust into that position of being a role model. And I guess just how important is that in this overall launch today?
Well, it's very important because it goes without saying that our teams obviously do an excellent job at developing the players, providing them with excellent training and competition as hockey players. And we've built, as you know, a first-class education program that we support the players in every manner that way. We just felt there's a number of other areas, and this is just one of them, that we need to support the players in their off-ice activities and to make sure that when they're socializing with friends or teammates or home in the summers, that they're fully aware of this, because we would not want anything to happen that would impact adversely on their careers. And if we're in front of that, I think that's important. And certainly, unfortunately, we hear more often than not that there's just situations that occur. And I think what we're trying to do here is just educate the players as to those risks and make sure that they're prepared if they encounter that.
It's no doubt that you know, it's good for the league and for the players as role models reflecting on their teams. But what I also find really interesting is how well this could help a player going forward. So many of the Western Hockey League's product go on to the next level, American League, National Hockey League, whatever. How big a stepping stone is this for these players?
Well, we really believe that the environment that we offer these players is a very positive one, but we have to continue to challenge ourselves around, you know, continuing to educate the players, whether this is in areas of anti-doping or other social matters. We have a variety of different programs that are available to the players and counseling them. And we just want them to develop good habits, make good choices when in situations where, as they not only progress through our league, but once they leave the league and whether they pursue their post-secondary education through our scholarship program or whether they pursue professional hockey, that they're well-prepared for success in life. And we think this information is going to be very helpful in that regard.
How much do you expect this program to evolve in the coming years?
Well, I think it will evolve in a way that's going to, first of all, be embraced by all the players' police services. As I mentioned earlier, we've had a long-standing relationship with the RCMP. Obviously, the Calgary Police Service in this case has performed a very important leadership role. But we have teams in 22 centers across Western Canada, the U.S., Pacific Northwest, all of which have various jurisdiction laws and so forth that apply. And I think it's going to evolve to the point where I think we're going to learn a lot from the feedback that we receive from the other 21 jurisdictions in the league and the club liaison officers who work directly with the players on this program.
Ron Robison, the commissioner of the Western Hockey League, our guest here on The Big Show. We're talking about the launch of the Player Impact Program. Tell me about the role of the Calgary Flames in this, Ron.
Well, it all got started with the conversation between the police chief and Brian Burke. And as Brian is well known for, he is very passionate about making sure that the players are given all the support that they possibly can have, both on the ice and off the ice. And it was Brian's conversation with the Calgary Police Service that got the ball rolling, and consequently they jumped on board and dedicated a significant amount of resources behind this. And it was great to have Steve Kelly involved. Steve's not only an NHL alumni, but got his start in his career in the Western Hockey League with the Prince Albert Raiders, and had a real good understanding of the challenges that these young players face when they enter the league, and felt that we needed to move on this very quickly. So everything just came together, and we were very fortunate that the Calgary Police Service took the advice of the Calgary Flames, if you will, and really jumped on board with a great program.
Ron, I just want to double back and make sure I understand one thing about the program is that, you know, it is education for your players, but it's also an opportunity for your players to act as ambassadors within the community too, right, on some of these subjects?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that certainly our players are known for and certainly once they leave our league, move on to other levels, continue to do is educate youth, educate other organizations on these types of social risks. And I think we have the benefit sometimes of support services that other young people don't have, and consequently, if we can help spread that word, that's something we're gonna do. And our teams do an excellent job of working with various community groups in that regard. But if they can spread that influence, certainly with friends and in the community where they are, I think it's going to only help expand the effectiveness of this program.
Ron, it goes without saying that, you know, there are, you know, dark parts of the history of the league that have led us to probably where we are today. I mean, it's hard to, you know, I'm without direct input, it's hard to believe that we'd be here without the actions of Sheldon Kennedy and certainly Theo Fleury and the way that they've kind of brought certain taboo subjects, as it were, to the forefront. Can you just talk about the influence? You know, I think, again, maybe he's had a direct result, but I think so much of what Sheldon's done in respect in sport and see it here in this project.
Well, Sheldon has certainly done such a remarkable job in educating youth and organizations on the risks and social risks associated with harassment and abuse, not only in hockey, but in society in general. And he's been a leader certainly in this country and worldwide, quite frankly, in that regard. And in that respect, we have worked alongside Sheldon in introducing a number of programs, and the Canadian Red Cross, for instance, have seminars each year designed to deal with bullying, harassment, abuse issues that players encounter, as every people are aware, and certainly is ever too present in society, and we have to make sure that they're alert to those issues. We have working with Sheldon as well with all of our management staff go through Respect in Sport and have to be certified in those programs. It goes to show you that it's really important to continue to educate youth generally, but hockey players who are put in positions where they're in many cases leaving home at a young age and have to act independently. They have great support from our billet families and from our teams, but again, in many cases they're required to make some critical decisions on their own, and we just want to make sure they're equipped with the appropriate information and empowered to make the right decisions at the right time.
Are there equivalent programs in your fellow CHL stops, the Ontario Hockey League, Quebec League? Do they have similar programs?
Yes, all of the leagues offer a variety of player support services. These are not unique necessarily to the Western Hockey League. The program that we just discussed, the Player Impact program with the Calgary Police Service, is a new program which we will share with Ontario and Quebec to see if they are interested in. But many of them have relationships already established with police services. But this is a standardized program that I think will gain momentum across the country, and be adopted by the other leagues. We always share our best practices, and this is certainly one we're going to do. But they all provide a wide variety of services that assist the players as they move through the leagues.
Ron, you and I have had this conversation many times. The world, it keeps on changing, and you got to adapt. And it's kudo to you and your league for doing something like this. And as you know, I have a great deal of pride in this city, so I'm very proud of the fact that it's looks like a Made in Calgary initiative, which is kind of cool.
Well, we're very fortunate that we have leaders in this community who have assisted us in this regard, and hats off to the great work of Brian Burke, the Calgary Flames, and in particular the Calgary Police Service, who have helped us tremendously. This will be a great legacy for them, and it's going to be very interesting to see how this is accepted in all of the jurisdictions, not only in Canada, but the United States as well.
As always, my friend, I appreciate this. Thanks for giving us some time today.
Thanks, Ron.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, guys.
Ron Robinson, the commissioner of the Western Hockey League, the launching of the Player Impact Program, and I'll wave the flag. Made in Calgary solution, right? Calgary Police Service, Calgary Flames.
Well, and I mean, I think it's cool that Brian Burke's kind of the spearhead to it. I like
surprised.
Nope, me neither. I like that the Calgary Police Service has kind of designed the program. And what he said right there at the end is, I think, really important, standardized, in that this is something that they can... Okay, so the Calgary Police Service has designed it, but Ron mentioned the partnerships they have with the RCMP and the great relationship they have there. So they can take that there and say, hey, this is standardized. This is what the Calgary Police Service came up with. Would you be interested in helping us implement it in other cities, other places where the RCMP serves as the police force? So I think that's a really important thing to hear. And I just think, more than anything else, it's crucial just to hear that a league, in this case, the Western Hockey League, is fully aware that there are changing and evolving challenges that come with being a high-level athlete anywhere that you're big time in the public eye and representing something. There are more challenges now than there ever have been. Those challenges are different than they were 10 years, 20 years, 30 years ago. And so your policies and the way that you will go about supporting your players or people involved in your organization can't be from 20 years ago. They have to be designed for now, and they have to be looking forward. And I think that's the most refreshing thing about all of this.
Sadly, you can't change history, but you need to learn from it. You have to learn from it, and you hope that, you know, this kind of program will go a long way. There are plenty of times where you're reactionary in society, and I will not defend that. We are, but a tip of the hat today to the Western Hockey League and Ron Robinson for this program. You ready for tomorrow?
No.
Outdoor show.
No.
It's an outdoor show.
Not ready whatsoever.
You want to give a little bit of love tomorrow to your Flames warm-up? Flames warm-up program? Like RJ's, your Flames
My
warm-up?
My Flames warm-up program.
But I understand you have a...
I just read sponsor lines.
No, that's not true.
We've got Brad Treleving on at 7:10 tomorrow. Brad's going to be all over the station.